It is a truth, universally acknowledged, that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. You know what he's saying there, right? You find a single guy with money, it means he doesn't have a wife. That is from a book called Pride and Prejudice, one of the great novels of our time. And it's one of the most highlighted passages according to Amazon. Did you know that? So you're familiar with Amazon Kindle, right? It's their electronic reader. And so you get your books on Kindle, and as you're reading, you can underline, you can highlight passages, and Amazon tracks the passages we highlight. That's one of the most underlined passages of all passages in all books that people read on the Kindle. Here's another one, said by Steve Jobs in Walter Isaacson's biography of him. Pretend to be completely in control, and people will assume that you are. Sounds good. Any guesses what the most underlined passage of all time on the Kindle is? Any guesses what book it might have come from? The most underlined passage of all time comes from one of the Hunger Games books. And it is this. Because sometimes things happen to people and they're not equipped to deal with them. There's a window into the soul of the younger generation right now, right? That's what they're feeling. That's the most underlined passage in any book on the Kindle devices. Hundreds of thousands of them around the world. Now, the most underlined book, according to Amazon, is the Bible. And can you guess which passage of the Bible might be the most underlined passage of all time? It's not John 3:16, right? It's not John 11:35, Jesus wept. Everyone can remember that one. It's this passage, Philippians 4:6-7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. We want peace. Whether you're a mom yelling at your kids after school, or a manager dealing with conflict between her workers, or you're caught in some conflict with the neighbor, or you're just constantly having to deal with family drama, we all want peace. But what is it we ask for? We don't just ask for peace. What do we ask for? What, picture the mom yelling at her kids. What is it you ask your kids for? Can I just get 5 minutes of peace? Right? Just 5 minutes, because you know you can't get six. Right? You know peace is too fragile for six. Can I just get 5 minutes of peace? That's all I need. I'm not going to ask for a day. I'm not going to ask for a week. That would be crazy. And I've heard my mom ask for just a moment of peace. Right? Just give me a moment of peace. Experience tells us peace is too fragile to last. And so we're always saying things like, just don't look at your sister, right? Because that's going to cause a fight. Don't look at your sister. And you can hear coworkers telling each other, oh, don't give him that report today, right? Stay away from him today. Or you can hear people talking about the neighbor. Oh, don't touch his lawn. I had a neighbor like that. Mr. and Mrs. Smith lived next door to us, and we were not allowed to touch their lawn. It was not even a big lawn, 20 by 20 maybe. And if we were playing ball and it rolled onto their lawn, we had to go ring their doorbell. Couldn't walk on that. We had to walk on the path, ring their doorbell. Mr. Smith would come out and get the ball from off the lawn and give it to us because you couldn't touch his lawn. Eventually, he got so tired of trying to keep his lawn perfect that he just ripped it all up and put down rocks, dead rocks. Human history is a living and dying demonstration that peace is incredibly fragile and cannot last. So we try to build peace just for as long as possible. And we know from millennia of experience that peace is only as good as it's built on. So if you got a couple friends and you're in school and they get into a fight and the teacher makes them shake hands, or your guys playing out in the field, shake hands and make up, right? They shake hands, but you know it ain't done. You know that fight's coming back the next day or maybe in a few minutes. It's not done. You can't make peace on that handshake. Make your kids say sorry to each other. How long does that last? Until you leave the room, maybe, right? They've said sorry. You can't build peace on just forcing someone to say sorry. And even we've got our sophisticated peace processes now. We sit down and we walk people through peace processes. When I do this with married couples, you walk through, and your goal is not to make it so there's just going to be peace forever. There's going to be fights. And so the goal of marriage counseling and marriage preparation is to say, okay, there's going to be fights. What are you going to do when the fights happen? How are you going to behave? Because you know peace can't last. So negotiators, they walk around away from their peace processes like bomb diffusers, like, okay, we got it set, we think, but it's a tenuous peace, so just be quiet, everyone, so it doesn't explode. Because we know peace is so impossible. Just look around at our nation, look around at our world. Feels as though the people who are looking to build peace are standing around with tools in their hand. There are a lot of people who want to build peace. But the ground we're trying to build on is the sand that keeps shifting and blowing here and there. And who knows where to build peace on? Whether it's between nations that have been warring for millennia and centuries, or just two people who've been feuding. What do you build peace on? How do you start? And everyone's looking for that. No one knows where to find it. And that's our problem, right? There's the heart of our problem. We still haven't found anything to build peace on that can stand the test of time and human nature. You can get moments of peace, maybe a year of peace, maybe some years of peace, but nothing can stand the test of time and human nature. And peace is only as strong and as vital as what you build it on. The Apostle Paul understood this because Paul was looking at a church in Ephesians chapter 2, which is where we are today still. He was looking at a church filled with two groups of people who hated each other. It was a systemic hate that was born in and planted from birth. They saw each other as dirt. They saw each other as subhuman. They had been separated by centuries of bitterness and violence. And yet here these two groups of people are together in church, in peace. And it's like, well, how is this possible? And maybe we can learn something from it. So go to Ephesians chapter 2. You can follow on the screen or in your bulletin or in the app. You can take notes there too and follow along. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 11. Paul's going to start by reminding us, of what a miracle it is that they're where they are and they have this peace. He's going to remind them of where they came from and the situation they were in so they appreciate this peace that they have. Peace was impossible. Verse 11 of Ephesians chapter 2. It says, therefore, remember that formerly you who were Gentiles, just anybody who's not a Jew, by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves the circumcision, which is done in the body by human hands. Remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. Let's try and understand that. See, the Jews looked at the Gentiles, the non-Jews, and they saw that they had all these different gods and all their statues and all the things they made, and they thought of them as fools. They thought of them as uncircumcised beasts, animals, dogs. And it was like, to the Jews, it was like the Gentiles walked around like Pigpen from the Peanuts thing, like just in a cloud of sin. Like they were just covered in it. And so for a Jew to even be near a Gentile, they felt like they were literally becoming filthy, spiritually filthy. And the Gentiles, they were spiritual dogs and they wanted to keep them out. The Jews, they had all their ceremonies and they had circumcision, which was a key sign to them that you were part of their community, and all their cleanliness laws, and they treated them like gang signs. They showed who was in and who was out. If you couldn't flash those signs the right way, you were definitely out, and the Gentiles were definitely out. And the Gentiles looked at the Jews. And the Gentiles actually called the Jews atheists, which seems weird to us. Atheist means you don't believe in God. Well, the Gentiles looked at the Jews and saw they had no idols, no statues, nothing representing any God. So they said, well, you have no God. And so to the Gentile, the Jew was hopeless, and he was an arrogant fool. Because if you're going to have any hope and any peace in the world, you've got to appease the gods. Otherwise, you're just lost. You're in trouble. Keep the gods happy, you have peace. Make the gods angry, and you have no peace. Well, these people are ignoring the gods, then there's no way they should have peace in their lives. Which kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they would look at them and say, well, there's no way you can have peace in your life, so if they look like they have peace in their lives, we need to make them miserable, because there's no way they should have peace in their lives because they don't have the gods. Right? So you could see how these two groups of people, there's no common ground that they can work with. And for generations and generations, there was no shot of peace among them. And then Paul comes and talks to them and turns both of their perspectives on their heads. and points out their fatal flaw, the thing that was keeping them from ever having peace. And it's this. They're both groups, relying on things they make with their own hands in order to get peace. We're the same way. They're both relying on the things they make with their own hands. They do with their own hands to make peace, to build peace. We can't make peace. Listen to me, because that should bother you a little bit. We can't make peace. We can't build peace. Not real peace. Not a peace that lasts. We're always trying to build it on things we do with our own hands. And everything we do with our own hands is, one, tainted by our own sinful, selfish nature, and two, temporary because of death. So look through history. There's no peace that can outlast sinful human nature and death. And so Paul tells the Gentiles, who have their gods all over the place, he looks at them and says, hey, guys, you're atheists. And they're like, what are you talking about, Paul? Look at how many gods we have. We're the opposite of atheists. We're polytheists. We've got all these different gods. And Paul says, yeah, I don't care how many gods you have. None of them are real gods. I don't care how many gods you're worshiping and giving your life to and your attention to. They're not gods at all, so you have effectively no God. They're all things you've just made with your own hands, and there is no real hope in them, so you're a hopeless and without peace. Because peace that is built merely on human hands will never last. You can get 5 minutes, maybe get a year or even years, but ultimately it comes crumbling down. So Paul says, remember where you came from. And he tells these non-Jews, these Gentiles, the gods you had are no gods, no real hope. That means you were lost. You were cut off from God's people, by the way. You hated the people who were God's people. You hated the people who God was using to bring blessing to the world. You treated them as enemies. You had absolutely no hope. You were just deceiving yourselves the whole time. So yeah, you were without God. And then he turns to the Jews, actually, and says, you weren't any better. Did you catch Paul's subtle little swipe there? Go back to verse 12. Or go back a couple of verses. Where are we? Where he says, yeah, verse 11. Go back to verse 11. Therefore, remember, you were Gentiles by birth, called uncircumcised by those who call themselves circumcision. And then he just throws in this little thing, which, by the way, is done in the body by human hands. See, the Jews were building their lives around what they were making with their own hands too. Only instead of carving idols, they were counting on circumcision. They took circumcision, which was supposed to be the symbol that you were being cut off from sin, cut off from evil and wicked in the world, and indicate that there was a divine inner transformation happening in you. That's what it was supposed to indicate. It was just an outer sign that was supposed to indicate an inner transformation, that you were free from sin and moving away from sin. They took that and all God's other laws and that were supposed to be bringing inner change, and they just made them outer signs that showed who was in and who was out. And they became so fastidious about keeping those outer signs, but they didn't, for the most, as a nation, focus on the heart transformation that they were supposed to show. And as soon as you build your life on the things you make with your hands, you're no longer building a foundation for peace. Whether it's tying to your ancestors' traditions or your work culture environment or money or whatever it is, you're not making a foundation for peace. You're building walls. So God's laws became a wall, keeping Gentiles out instead of turning God's people into this living, breathing invitation to come into God's presence. And so peace was impossible. The people who were given God's peace had tried to build a wall around it. The people who didn't have God's peace but should have seen it, they hated the people who had it. Peace was impossible. Peace is impossible. We can't make peace because there's nothing we can make with our own hands that will last and stand the test of time or human nature. We need a better foundation. Just think about all the places you're building peace in your life right now. How you're working to find peace. How hard you work at your job. Why? So you can get some rest. Have enough money to have some rest. Do you ever really find peace for more than just a moment? Not just 5 minutes, though. Not just an absence of conflict. Not having conflict is not peace. Not having war is not the same as peace. Peace is a deep wellness and a rest, a wholeness and a completeness So we're not just talking about no one's bothering me, oh, this is peace. No, peace is a deep wholeness inside. And that peace has to be built on something that can outlast our human nature and death and decay so that we can have real peace. And when we find that peace, it gives our lives a significance that they could never have just based on things we build with our own hands. And that peace, the peace that is built on Jesus, is the only peace that will last and that'll lead us to a life of significance. Look at verse 13. It says, but now in Christ, you who were once far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, by setting aside in his flesh the law with its commands and regulations. His purpose was to create in himself one new humanity out of the two, thus making peace, and in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. He came and he preached peace to you who are far away and peace to those who are near, for through him we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. I reminded you a few times that Paul was in prison when he wrote this, right? He's in prison in Rome. Anybody remember how Paul got into prison in Rome? Anybody remember how he got there? The events that took place. So Paul had gone back to Jerusalem, and he went to the temple. But he couldn't go into the temple yet because he'd been out traveling around, and he was considered dirty. He'd been among a lot of Gentiles. And so he had to go through a period of purification. So he went to the temple and said, I'm starting my period of purification. Great, you write it down. And then he would go and have to do things, make offerings, and get purified. Well, people saw him walking around with a guy from Ephesus at the time, a guy named Trophimus. And someone assumed that because they saw Paul with this Gentile from Ephesus, outside the temple, they assumed, oh, he must have taken him into the temple, past a wall. They have walls there around the temple separating the different areas, and there's an area where Gentiles are not allowed to go past, and there's signs on the wall saying, Gentiles, do not go past this wall on pain of death. And someone said, well, Paul, we saw him with Trophimus. He must have brought him inside the temple. Paul brought him inside the temple, and they raised a whole big fuss, and they accused Paul of doing that. The people beat Paul. The Roman soldiers came in and broke it up, and they arrested Paul, and then they got in trouble because Paul was actually a Roman citizen, and they weren't allowed to do that. And Paul just turned all that into a chance for him to get taken to Rome by saying, I appeal to Caesar. So now they took him to Rome. That's the whole mess. That's how Paul got there. Because Paul had taken someone past this wall, this wall that they knew was supposed to be a wall. It shouldn't have been a wall that kept people out, but it had become a wall of hostility. So when Paul says that there was this hostile wall dividing the Jews and the Gentiles, he knows what he's talking about. And Paul knows Jesus, and he knows what Jesus did to get rid of that wall, and Paul's amazed by it. We're all looking for peace, but our sinful nature makes that impossible. What we need is a new humanity where we can leave aside these things that keep dividing us, where all these diverse and hostile groups can actually become one. And Jesus provided a way to make us all one. He did it by taking God's laws on his back and our sin on his back and our hostility on his back, and he carried it to the cross, fulfilling all of God's law. And he allowed himself to be killed and dragged all of our hostility into the grave and buried it. And if he just died there, means nothing. God raised him from the dead. And he rose up victorious over all of that. Jesus was able to do that because Jesus is God. That is the bedrock of what we believe. And when you believe that, what you know is that changes everything. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, let's go. Let's leave. Let's get out of here. Let's go have some breakfast somewhere. There's got to be a good brunch place. There's no point. But Jesus rose from the dead. And that means that Jesus could take all of our hostility and all of God's law, fulfill God's law, take our hostility, bury it, and make a new way for us, a new humanity for us. This is what Jesus did. And so now instead of a wall, Jesus presents us with a gate. He demolished the wall and gave us a gate, a single gate into peace with God and with each other. And it's through Jesus. It's through Jesus. Jesus didn't make peace for us. People get that wrong all the time. He didn't bring peace to us. That's not what Paul says. Look at verse 14. Paul says, he himself is our peace. For through him, we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. We can't make peace with our own hands. Jesus is peace. The peace we make with our hands is fragile. It's built up by letting go of stuff. It's like building sandcastles on the beach. Either nature's going to come and wash it away, or a bully's going to come and knock it down, or some careless guy walking by is going to kick it. That's the peace we build. But what Paul is saying is, look at you, church. You used to be these two groups of people who hated each other and really would rather see each other dead. For generations, that's what it was like. And here you are sitting together, worshiping God together because of Jesus. It's not because you negotiated compromises. And you said, okay, I'll let go of these things. And you said you'll let go of those things. And we'll just kind of try and find a common denominator between us. It's not about anything we let go of, Paul says. Peace is only about who we have grabbed hold of. You've grabbed hold of Jesus. He is peace. He is our peace. And peace is only as good as what you build it on. And our peace is built on the Son of God giving his life for us, taking everything that divided us, killing it in his own flesh on the cross, and rising from the dead. Only Jesus rose from the dead. Only Jesus can give us peace. Only Jesus overcame our sinful human nature. Only Jesus overcame death. Peace can only be built on Jesus. And the peace that we build on Jesus lasts. And it gives us a sense of purpose in our lives. It gives us real purpose to our lives. Jesus gives us that peace. Here's the simple truth of the gospel. Whatever else you build peace on won't last. But Jesus overcame those things. Build peace on him. And that's got to start for us today. Right? That starts by letting go of the things you're holding on to, everything you're holding on to, and just grabbing hold of Jesus. If you want to find a lasting peace, let go of everything else and just grab hold of Jesus. Grabbing hold of Jesus means that there's nothing in your life and in your identity that even comes close to being as important as Jesus. That's the only way we find this peace that Jesus offers. There's no way, I know, look, I've grown up in a world, same as you, where we kind of want to have all of it. Can I have Jesus and? I want peace. Jesus is peace. I've got to grab hold of Jesus. All those other things that help me figure out who I am in the world, my nationality, my identity, how I look, how I act, who and what I belong to, all that stuff, those dividing lines, they fade away when you grab hold of Jesus. They're not all horrible and bad, but they fade away when you grab hold of Jesus. And those things are no longer walls because you found peace in Jesus. And so then the question is, okay, if grabbing hold of Jesus is the way to peace, then is it possible for me to have peace with someone who doesn't also grab hold of Jesus? Maybe you can't. Jesus said, and I don't think he was joking, if the world hated me, it's going to hate you also. But as Christians, all too often what we do is we hold up the cross and we make it like a wall. We forget, no, what the cross is a representation, is a symbol of that wall being torn down so that peace is possible, that the cross represents a gateway, not a signpost saying, hey, you're in, you're out, but a signpost saying, here's the way in. Here's the way into Jesus, into God. And instead of encouraging people to grab hold of Jesus, our message comes across more as, hey, you better live up to this or God's not going to accept you. Paul wrote in a letter to the Romans before he went there, it's possible as far as it depends on you, if it's possible as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So look, we're only going to find lasting peace when we grab hold of Jesus. But I can't force anyone to grab hold of Jesus. So what should my posture be toward them? It should be the same posture Jesus had on the cross, right? Arms open wide, inviting and drawing and telling people about this salvation and this grace and this peace that Jesus is, that can be found in him. That's the posture I take, arms open wide. But then among those of us who've grabbed hold of Jesus, when we truly have, there is a peace that begins to grow that is revolutionary. And if we would do this, it will change our world. It'll be a peace that radiates into the world through us. Let's look at what Paul says happens when we realize that Jesus is our peace and we all grab hold of him. Verse 19, he says, consequently, because you've grabbed hold of Jesus, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. Now, you got to remember what I've told you about this city to really appreciate what Paul's saying. Remember, the center of life in this city was this seventh wonder of the ancient world, the temple built to the goddess Artemis. And that temple was built, remember I told you about, there was a meteorite that had fallen and was there in the ground, and they built this temple around it with all their stones, and people came from all over the place to look down at this meteorite that had fallen onto the ground and was sitting there, and they worshiped around it. It seemed like some kind of sign of fertility and life, and there was this whole thriving thing in Ephesus. The whole business of Ephesus was really around this temple and people worshiping around this temple. That's what was happening. People coming from all over to see this dead rock lying on the ground and a bunch of dead stones that were put together beautifully to make an amazing temple. Now, what happens when we grab hold of Jesus, and we become these new humans, these new people united in Jesus, one humanity in Jesus. What happens? We are then joined together in him. We're given a peace that breaks down all the walls between us, the walls built with dead blocks and bricks, because in grabbing hold of Jesus, we let go of everything else. And why would you hold on to temporary things that don't last, right? And then look what happens to us. We're not here flocking around some dead piece of wood. We put that up to remind us of things. We're not gathering around some dead piece of rock on the ground. Paul says, we're coming to see the one who has risen. And so he says there's this foundation that was built on the apostles and prophets, and then there's Jesus who's at the cap, right? But we're not coming to see a dead temple with a dead rock. We're not coming to a temple like the Jews had, where there were dividing walls and God only visited occasionally and only special people got to go in and see him. We become ourselves a living temple that has been under construction from the beginning. And he tells us the foundation was the prophets. So this goes all the way back into the Old Testament. God was laying that foundation, and the apostles are the foundation, and Jesus is the cornerstone, the capstone, sitting above on top, so that everything lines up and aligns with Jesus. And do you know what's in between those two? A whole bunch of stones. But they're not dead stones. They're alive. And they're all different shapes and sizes and colors and shades, and they're us. We're the stones in this temple, this living temple that is being built, not around some dead rock out of dead stones, but around the one who is risen, and we're living stones being built together. And this temple is filled all the time with God's Spirit, so God's power radiates inside of us. This is what it means to be the church in this world, and this is what our church should reflect here where we are. That's who we're supposed to be. Verse 22, in him, you're being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. Are we a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit? Inside of us, this temple, God's presence should live and pulse. The Holy Spirit fills this temple and fills each one of us, these different stones. And his presence gives us life. Which means that Jesus doesn't only give us peace that lasts, but a peace that will also give your life significance. You're a living stone, part of a living temple, being built in this world to bring glory to God and help others see God's beauty. A temple that is joined together in peace and that radiates peace into this world. That gives your life, that gives my life significance. I'm not just part of a company that's achieving excellence through supporting document transfers. No, that's not my purpose in life. Whatever your company purpose is, that's not your purpose in life. If you've grabbed hold of Jesus, your purpose in life is to be a living stone and a living temple built on a foundation that is from the beginning and that reaches to Jesus. And we want to bring honor to the headstone, right? To Jesus. The peace that's built on Jesus will last and give you a life of significance. Worship team, would you come back? In this temple here, we're not about race or politics or gender or age. We're about Jesus and only Jesus. We live to be shaped and joined together by him. Church is not then some event we attend once a week. If that's how we see church, then let's pack it up and go. If that's all church is, then it's just another thing lying around a bunch of dead stones. And you're not going to find peace here any more than you would anywhere else. The church is about being and becoming this living temple that Paul talks about here, radiating and vibrating and shining in a world filled with dead temples. Those other temples have dead stones leading them. But we have Jesus, the risen and living stone, sitting at the pinnacle. And God lives among us by his Holy Spirit. So the walls we make are alive and constantly bringing in other stones of all different shapes and sizes to fit in and be joined together so that we are a living temple. He is our cornerstone. As we all line up with him, we're aligned with each other. We can't sit here and tell, let me try and line up with you, let me try and line up with you and figure out how you and I line up. That's never going to work. What works is I line up with Jesus, you line up with Jesus, and guess what happens just naturally, spiritually? You and I are lined up. Because when we're both lined up with Jesus, we're lined up with each other. And Jesus is the one to align around because he overcame death and sin. Together then, we stand here in stark contrast to all the other dead temples out there built with human hands around dead things that don't have life and can't give life. Because we have a real peace that's built on Jesus. He's our peace. Let's just worship Jesus this morning. Would you stand and let's sing this song, Cornerstone, celebrating this peace that Jesus has given us.